Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on, man? How we doing?
I'm doing well, gents. How you guys doing?
We're great. Appreciate you taking time to join us today. Charles, Tom Brady continues to be in the news. We've talked about his retirement saga with you, and now apparently whenever he's done playing football, he'll be joining up with Fox Sports, and it was reported a 10-year, $375 million contract. Now, apparently, according to some people, that's maybe not necessarily exactly what the contract is going to be, but what do you make of Tom Brady as a lead analyst post-playing career?
It's interesting, you know. I'm curious to know, look, if the $375 million number's not correct, I'd be curious to know precisely what's not correct about it, because when it was initially reported and the number was kind of put in the $20 to $25 million range, that didn't make a lot of sense to me, honestly, because I think Tom Brady can do a lot of things and make $20, $25 million a year, and I would not say broadcasting appears, at least to me, to be the most natural fit for him. I can't say that definitively because I haven't seen him work. I mean, I don't know what it's going to look like. And I think initially I probably had some doubts about Tony Romo. And then after I had a chance to see him call a few games, I was like, no, you know, clearly I'm wrong and this suits him. And I think what's interesting about Brady, though, is what would lean into this, the kind of personality that would lean into this, we've only really seen that side of Brady maybe the last 2 years. You know, the vast majority of when he played for the Patriots, we really didn't see kind of the colorful character that he's become the last couple of years. Now, if we get, you know, when he was on the shop and he was, you know, shooting his mouth off, that's the Tom Brady we get, that'd be great. It'd be awesome. I'd love to see that guy. You know, regularly. I don't think he could really go that far as a broadcaster, but if it's closer to that Tom Brady than the dialed back Tom Brady, if it's closer to the guy we've seen the last couple of years, I have no doubt that he could probably craft himself into, you know, someone who's entertaining. But to me, the $375 million, that makes sense to me because this is Fox reaching for their Peyton Manning kind of franchise guy. The way ESPN has sort of leaned into Peyton Manning, I think Fox is, you'd be doing the same thing with Tom Brady. And by the way, I don't think that would just be for games. You know, when they talk about this idea of an ambassador, you know, he's going to be spending a lot of time with other CEOs. I'm sure he'd probably be doing things on other platforms with them. You know, Fox Sports is going to dip into the gambling world. I'm curious if that would be part of this kind of a deal. This just the same way that ESPN has provided different platforms for Peyton Manning, I would assume that's what Fox would be doing with Tom Brady, but he would also be calling the games.
Yeah, well, that, we were talking about that earlier, Charles. I would certainly hope so because, I mean, like people don't choose games because of the announcer, do they? I mean, I understand the Manning cast is different. That's actually choosing to not watch the traditional broadcast because this is a new entertaining idea with a very likable personality, but I mean, right. these games are incredibly highly rated anyway. The inventory is extremely valuable, and people are going to watch games because of the games, right? I just like the numbers here blow me away.
Yeah, I don't think fans necessarily choose to watch a football game or not watch a football game just based entirely on who's calling the game. I do dispute this idea that broadcasters don't matter and that they don't accentuate, you know, the experience. And I'll give you an example. Like, you know, Dawn really liked, you know, Chris Collinsworth and Michaels. You know, she really appreciated, and she's not, you know, a football fan that's like, hey, I got to watch a game every single week or whatever. But, you know, whenever they would be on, she, you know, she just liked them as a crew, and she would be invested in a game. And, you know, she was, as a casual fan, she was disappointed to hear that, you know, that partnership was splitting up. I do think there's an element of it that definitely adds into the experience, and given how competitive, you know, the networks are getting over these broadcast teams, I think there's I think part of it too is becoming, what else can we get out of these guys beyond just calling games? Maybe that's part of the equation that we're missing, is maybe what these networks have in mind as they move forward. But you know, look, we all talked about the gambling aspect of this and the thought process that more people are going to be watching games than ever, you know, over the next decade. That's what the NFL is banking on, that, you know, the ancillary part of the gambling experience will bring more people to the television and the ratings. And, you know, so you're technically going to get more bang out of your buck with your broadcasters, and more people are watching the game. It is a lot of money. I mean, it's, I don't know. I guess to me, if you're Fox, and again, you're really trying to establish yourself as the leader here, and I guess win, you know, with all these different moves, it makes sense to me that you would chase Brady. But once again, as I said, I don't think it's just calling games. I think when we see how this all unfolds, if it ultimately does come to fruition, I think he's going to do a lot more for them than just call games. That wouldn't make sense to me, that you're paying a guy, you know, $37.5 million a year just to call a slate of football games. I don't know how you make that, you know, financially worth your while. But if you're going the route of Manning, I think Manning's been extremely lucrative for you know, ESPN, whether it's Peyton's Places, whether it's a lot of the other sort of, I guess, advertising that he does. I mean, he just draws a lot to ESPN in terms of his experience. He provides a lot of content. The Manning cast was something different. But remember, that was born out of the fact that he had a relationship with the network. So there is a possibility for outside-the-box thinking by Fox on this that maybe we just don't understand right now.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. And Charles, last week after you got off the show with us, it was just a couple hours later that Ryan Tannehill got up to speak at the podium. And when he did, he said a lot of things, one of which being it was not his job to mentor Malik Willis, or did not think it was his job to mentor Malik Willis. And it was interesting. That caused a firestorm, as you might expect around here, and a firestorm really throughout the entire league. What did you make of those comments by Ryan Tannehill last week?
You know, I get what he was trying to say. I don't think he necessarily said it the right way. The interesting thing about the quarterback backup dynamic is, maybe a lot of people don't really get this, but actually it's the backup's job to help the starter. Like, it's now he's obviously, you talk about Malik Willis, he's coming in as a rookie, so it's a different deal. But in a lot of situations, particularly top-end veteran starters, I mean, they essentially, in many respects, name their backup. You know, the franchise leans into backups that have really good relationships with the starters, because those backups tend to help them prepare for games. They're doing classroom work with them. They're the two of them are talking about how the offense can be developed, and you know, and working with the quarterback's coach and the OC. So in terms of like a veteran backup, it's definitely a relationship that's pointed more toward helping the starter as much as they can, preparing the starter as much as they can. And that's how, you know, particularly some high-end backups retain like long careers. I mean, they'll last throughout the league because they have an ability to do that. Now, when it comes to a rookie, you know, I guess I would disagree in some respects with Ryan Tannehill. His part of his job is to help make that franchise as good as it can be. And what helps in sort of that trench is making sure that the young guy understands the offense and, you know, is prepared if Ryan Tannehill gets hurt to step in and be able to function at a high level. It's somewhat awkward because him doing that, it potentially endangers the future of Ryan Tannehill's job. So it's a fine line you have to walk there. To me, when I read it and I kind of watched it in its context later, watched him say it, I just thought in my mind, like, probably just say that. Like, it's just not worth it. It's, you know, I see where he's coming from. I think from the standpoint of, you know, hey, this guy's coming in. He's got to learn this on his own. He's got to be able to, you know, show that he can develop. And you, as a starter, you know, you don't really want to become a babysitter for particularly someone who could eventually take your job. But at the same point, you also have to, show that, look, you can stand on your own 2 feet. I'll give you a good example of this. Years ago when the New Orleans Saints took Garrett Grayson, he came in and he was so, and I don't remember if they took him in the second or third round. He was like, he was a pretty high pick for them. And he was looked at someone that could eventually, take over for Drew Brees. He was way behind in the offense. And in some respects, Drew Brees and Luke McCown were just like, nope, this dude's on his own. Like if you can't pick it up in the classroom, we're not slowing down in meetings for you. And it's on you to come in and be able to keep up with us, not the other way around. Slow down our process so that you can develop. And it became a really big problem in the franchise. And ultimately, it kind of destroyed him inside the franchise. He was never able to turn that corner. And when you talk to people in the organization, they're like, hey, that's just kind of how it is with some of these guys. They're looking at young players, particularly draft picks, and coming in, they're saying, you can show up and keep up with our pace because, you endanger us by us having to take additional time and just slow the momentum of what we do every single week to groom you or suit you. And so they tried to get the quarterback's coach to work with them outside the classroom. It just never really worked out. But I think, let me ask you guys, would you understand that? If Ryan Tannehill looks at Malik Willis and says, he's not keeping up, it's not my job to adjust what we do, to help him keep up. I kind of understand that from a starter.
For sure.
No, I absolutely. Like, you've got to be at a certain level. I mean, I'll be honest, Charles, when he said it, it didn't even register with me. As you know, I'm oblivious to a lot of things, but I didn't even register. And then all of a sudden, a couple hours later, it's like, it's a headline everywhere. And I'm like, wow. Okay. But I think when you isolate the sentence, I'm glad you went back and looked at it. Like, when you isolate that sentence, yeah. And I agree, like, it's not necessary. Maybe say it a little bit differently or just don't even say it because you caused it. But it's incredible. I'm watching, Jeff Van Gundy calling the Warriors Grizzlies the other day. And he's like, this Ryan Tannehill not wanting to mentor people. Let me tell you about mentoring. Like, what? It's just incredible how this stuff can catch. I blame media. I blame you.
But part of it too is, I hate to say this, but you have to have self-awareness as a player to know that there are a lot of different kinds of media. When people say the media, I always laugh because I'm like, you're literally talking about tens of thousands of individuals who are all their own kind of entity. They all react differently and they're not all the same. Okay. So you talk about it like as this nebulous blob. No matter what, you go and you say this, you're going to have a percentage that don't go and watch the video to kind of see what the whole context, the vibe was, the tone of how he said it, whatever. Because if you just read the sentence itself, you don't really get the full life of what it was. But then you're going to get people who just go, okay, well, that's a good, that's great for aggregation. And then it becomes something on social media and everybody's arguing about it. So, it's a two-way street there. I wish media would do a better job, but I also think sometimes players have to have better self-awareness. And it's as easy as him following up and just saying, giving it a little more extended context beyond just the word. And by the way, he's not even the first person to say this. If we go back through history, there have been a number of quarterbacks who are like, hey, it's not, in some respects, however they worded it, it's not my job to coach this guy. It's, someone else's job in the organization. And so it's unfortunate, but I totally get where he's coming from. If anything, I think it's an opportunity for fans to learn and understand, how quarterback rooms function. And over all the years I covered the NFL, one of the most valuable things I think I ever learned was understanding how backups and starters functioned and, why when you look at certain backups, you'd sit there and go, God, this guy never sees the field. I remember when I covered the Lions, it was like Ty Detmer. I remember one time having a conversation with Steve Mariucci, and he was like, by the time that guy's career is over, he's going to make, $20 million, and it's going to be because he just functioned, he had an ability to function as a backup and support who the starter was. And he was like, it's completely invaluable. And you can carve out a really nice life being a good support role player. Brian Hoyer. Fans just, yeah, there's, I mean, there's, it's, look at Brady. I mean, look at Brady's backups over time. I mean, hasn't been, you know, at times it's changed, but, you know, there's been some consistency there, and that's because Tom gets comfortable with a certain guy. And another thing, this is kind of a weird inflection point, but it's also why there were at least a few franchises, and I believe this, when they talked about Colin Kaepernick and not wanting to bring in Colin Kaepernick as a backup, and I do think this is kind of a red herring, but I do think they're right. They're like, look, we're looking for a backup who can come in and support the starter, and we know we bring Colin in, he's going to want to cut our guy's throat. Like, and he meant, and this guy in particular meant it in a good way. He's like, he's going to go and take our guy's job. Like, that's what he's going to want to do. And in some places, that's great, but that's not what we're looking for. We really want a guy who's going to come in and fully support the starter. And again, I thought that was a bit of a red herring, but it also wasn't wrong. Like, I felt like, yeah, that's probably true. Like, Colin's not going to be happy being a backup. So it's just a really interesting dynamic. And there's probably a really good, you know, I'm sure there's probably a good 30 for 30 on, you know, whoever the longest tenured backup was in NFL history. By the way, you can make a hell of a lot of money as a backup in the NFL right now.
Oh, yeah. If no harm done.
I mean, it's amazing. Yeah, unbelievable. Yep. That's a great job.
Yeah, no question about it. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest here on Robbie and Rextro. Charles, you've been incredibly generous with your time. It's one of our highlights of the week here on the show, having you on every week. We appreciate you so much for your time, and we'll talk to you next season.
All right, sounds good, guys. Take care, all right?
Absolutely. Charles Robinson, our guest here on Robbie and Rextro. We'll take your thoughts on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll get back into Brady signing a monster deal with Fox as well. Coming up next, this is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nashville's own Big Machine Distillery wants to send you to the inaugural Tennessee Whiskey Trail Experience to celebrate International Tennessee Whiskey Day coming up on May 21st at Nissan Stadium. Text WHISKEY to 615-737-1025. That's WHISKEY to 615-737-1025 to be entered to win a pair of tickets. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Wednesday morning. Adam Binion from The Athletic coming up here at 9:30. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds as they move forward into their offseason right now. Joe, we talked about the Tom Brady deal, reportedly a 10-year, $375 million contract with Tom Brady to sign up with Fox Sports after he's done playing to be their lead analyst. As Charles pointed out, I think there will probably be some things that go along with that in addition to just the games themselves. But as you watch Tom Brady, his personality, everything involved, you think he'll be any good at this lead analyst stuff on the top NFL game of the week for Fox Sports? What do you make of his decision to team up with Fox after he's done playing football?
Well, I sure hope he is better than Drew Brees, who, you know, Drew Brees, great player, likable guy. I never totally got with him either, why people were just so hell-bent on Drew Brees. We got, you know, wasn't there like a bidding war for Drew Brees, different networks trying to get him? So I understand, like, the star quarterback, the big name in the sport, why wouldn't there be interest? But I just never thought Drew Brees would be that good. And I'm right. He's not very good. I'm sorry. But again, he's still a likable guy. He's, you know, still a great player. He'll always be known as a great player. He just doesn't bring a ton. And I think you knew right away with Peyton Manning that he'd be great because he's just funny. He's got this dry sense of humor. And Peyton Manning, like Romo, if Peyton Manning were in the game analyst chair, which I'd love to see him do that at some point, I think he'd be a lot like Romo in terms of quickly giving you that really, you know, it's the art of digging in on X's and O's, but also still explaining it and making it relatable, which is what Romo does so well. So Manning, I think, is easy to see him being good. With Brady, I don't know. I'm not super optimistic. I think he'll be fine, but will he be great in that role? Because that's what you're asking him to do. Now, maybe a lot of that salary. I mean, how many games of catch is he going to be playing with like the CEO's kids and stuff to pay off the, you know, the salary, you know? Ah, Tom's coming over for dinner again tonight, folks. Get that avocado tequila ready. Because I'd be asking him to do a whole bunch of other stuff besides just calling the games.
Well, my other question is, like, when's he going to stop playing? I mean, I know he was retired for 6 weeks this offseason, so maybe it is after next season, but, you know, when's he going to stop playing football? Now, I will say it's a lot easier to stop playing football when you signed a 10-year, $375 million contract. I'd probably stop playing a little sooner if I was Tom Brady.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, you know, he's chasing another ring. He wants to go out on top, which, hey, good for him. But what if it doesn't go? Is it just going to be based on, like, the next time he wins a ring, then he'll leave?
He's done, yeah.
Is that it?
I don't know.
You know. It could be a while. I mean, maybe they'll do it this year, but I don't know, man. It could be a while. Yeah, because if I was him, that's like, you can do no more damage to yourself and make more than you made basically every year of your playing career. Yes.
It's pretty incredible. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Adam Vinyan from The Athletic. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds as they now enter into the offseason. Speaking of the Preds, season tickets for the Preds 2022-23 season are on sale now. Full half and quarter season plans are available. You can join the Loyal Legion today and receive the best seat locations. Season ticket citizens also receive season-long benefits, including concession discounts, Nashville locker room discounts, pre-sales to shows at Bridgestone Arena, savings on Preds Foundation events, and much, much more. And you can also receive up to 6 bonus tickets to share with friends and family during the 22-23 regular season as well. You can learn more at NashvillePredators.com/season tickets. Once again, that's NashvillePredators.com/season tickets. We're back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. By the way, the Calder Trophy finalists just announced Bunting from Toronto, Sider from Detroit, Zegras for Anaheim. So no Tanner Janot. I don't think that's a huge surprise, but those are the Calder Trophy finalists this year in the NHL. The second time we've heard Creed and Scott Stapp today here on the program. And with that in mind, let's introduce our good friend Adam Vinyan from The Athletic on our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam, how are you?
Good. I chose that just for Joe.
Oh, I know you did. Thank you. I was lip syncing it.
What a beautiful night the other night at Bridgestone Arena with Scott Stapp in the house. Adam, you were at locker room cleanout day yesterday. We've talked a lot about that today here on the show. What were your takeaways from the Predators players talking yesterday, specifically with Philip Forsberg?
I think I said this to both of you as we were leaving the arena yesterday, that, and I'm sure you played the audio of Philip Forsberg from yesterday, but I thought that was the most definitive statement he's made about wanting to come back, and as he acknowledged that he can want to come back, but they do need to negotiate a contract that works for both sides. So just because he wants to come back doesn't mean that he will come back. But in terms, we've asked him about this at various points in the season, and I feel like that was the most, you know, definitive statement that he has made about wanting to return to Nashville. Other than that, I did think that it was pretty standard locker clean-out day sound bites. I thought the conversation with UC Saros was interesting about how, you know, although he started 67 games, he did not feel that it contributed to his injury or that he was fatigued down the stretch. And he said, if I felt tired, I would have told the coaching staff, because that was a big topic even before UC was injured, was whether his usage was leading to his declining play, especially when compared to the start of the season. But he seemed to dismiss that notion. But, of course, Forsberg was the headline. We'll see what happens. But I do feel like that was the most declarative statement we've had from Philip all year about wanting to come back to Nashville on a new contract.
Yeah, I agree. I thought, you know, Ekholm was good as always. I thought Matt Duchene was interesting. I feel like with Matt Duchene, like, Matt Duchene can make anything sound good. You know what I mean? Like, I walk away from Matt Duchene, I'm like, you know what? They got some things rolling here. Things are looking up for this team. Like, I'm sort of being facetious, but I mean, he made the comparison of this team now with Colorado a few years ago, and I'm like, well, I don't know about that. That was like superstars in their young period, and this team, of course, best players are you know, older. But he did sound, you know, kind of bullish on the future. I'm getting to my question here, which is, I heard that you and Willie had a good conversation yesterday. I want to hear about this. I wasn't able to listen to it, but there's a wide range of opinions on the direction of this franchise, I suppose, and not everyone agrees with you.
Yeah, well, if it was someone who was going to disagree with me, it was probably going to be Willie. I adore Willie Donick. He is. And I do not say this disparagingly. He is an eternal optimist, and I appreciate that as someone who is a natural cynic, not just about my job, but about life in general. the conversation that we had was that he felt that, you know, the Predators had a plan. They were going to rebuild on the fly, and that the plan, you know, I don't want to say worked, because it's still in progress, but that the plan, you know, the first year of the plan was about as expected. And to me, my disagreement with that was more of a big picture disagreement, that when it comes to successfully rebuilding a team on the fly, I think you just said it, Joe, that the majority of this team's best players are older. When you are successfully rebuilding on the fly, you need to have young stars in the making. And the example I always use is the Boston Bruins, who several years ago missed the playoffs, I believe 2 years in a row, and they maintained the core of their championship team with Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand and David Krejci and Tuukka Rask and Zdeno Chara, but they had a teenaged David Pastrnak and a teenaged Charlie McAvoy. And Pastrnak is now one of the, you know, best scorers in the league. And Charlie McAvoy, in my opinion, was robbed of a finalist spot for the Norris Trophy. With all due respect to Victor Hedman, who has been a Norris Trophy finalist for about 14 consecutive years. So the Predators do not have those players. They do not have a David Pastrnak or a Charlie McAvoy. They do not have a player who you can look at and say, when Roman Josi and Mattias Ekholm and Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene and Philip Forsberg move on, that player is going to be the future of the Nashville Predators, potentially with the exception of Juuse Saros. But Juuse Saros is 27 years old. Juuse is not a young player in the same mold that I'm discussing. So that was I think that was the major crux of our disagreement, that Willie saw progress. I saw perhaps incremental progress, but I do not see a clear path towards this team being a Stanley Cup contender in the near future.
Adam Vinyan from The Athletic on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So Adam, to that point, another part of the discussion was the necessity in your mind for someone from the ownership group to speak. Why do you feel that? Why do you think that's important for someone in the Predators ownership group to do that?
Well, the reason why I feel that way is there's going to be a day in the coming days or maybe early next week where David Poile is going to speak to the media and he's going to recap the season and he's going to answer questions. And I already know, just based on what I've heard from John Hines and many of the players, that the one thing that David Poile is going to say, among others, is that this team exceeded preseason expectations so that they're on the right track. I don't know, something along those lines. I wrote this in the story, and I do mean this. And again, I have a tremendous amount of respect for David Poile. I don't think I can properly express the respect that I have for David Poile. He is an unreliable narrator to me. I have a hard time hearing what he says and believing what he says. When it comes to discussing the direction of the franchise, because I think the results speak for themselves. And as far as I remember I had a conversation with David Poile. It may have been middle of last season or maybe early this season. I can't recall. But I asked him how ownership felt about the direction of the franchise. And he said, that's a question you'd have to ask ownership. Well, I don't have the ability to do that.
because the Predators do not make their owners available to the media. They just, the owners speak through Sean Henry. But if David Coyle's, I think Jared actually, I know the hell's freezing over. Jared made a good point yesterday. He said that if Herb Fritch, who is the chairman of the Predators, on the organizational flowchart, is David Coyle's supervisor, he needs to speak to us and, by extension, the fans about where this team is headed. Because I personally believe that consumer confidence in this product, the on-ice product, is lower among the fan base than at any point since I've been here, and I've been here for more than 7 years. So I just think that David Coyle going up there and talking about the direction of the franchise is going to fall on deaf ears for a lot of fans. And that's why it's important, in my opinion, for someone from ownership to actually speak, not speak through Sean Henry, actually speak to the media and, by extension, the fans.
Yeah, totally agree. What's been the prevailing reaction, Adam, to your column?
I will say this. It is the, based on all of the metrics that we have at our disposal at The Athletic, it is the most popular story I've written all season. I believe that the, based on the comments of which I checked, there were 107 comments on the story as I looked at it this morning. I would say about 104 agree with my general sentiment, that David Poile has lost some credibility among the fan base in terms of speaking about the direction of the franchise. And look, I know that when a team gets swept, it's easy to post a column like the one that I did and have everybody agree. I mean, I got a lot of comments, not just from readers, but people that we work with who said I didn't even wait until the body was cold to post that column. But when the series got to be 3-0, I had a hard time expecting it to become 3-1. So that column was ready, and you both know me very well, and I've said, and I said this to Willie and Darren and Derek yesterday when we talked. I do not manufacture hot takes or outrage. If I take a position as strongly as I did in that column, I have to actually believe what I'm saying, and that's what I believe. I believe that this team is in the worst place a franchise can be, which is stuck in a cycle of sustained mediocrity. And there does not appear to be a clear path out of it. And I think that's why what is contributing to the lack of confidence in the decision makers of the organization.
Adam Vinken, writer at The Athletic, big fan of Scott Stapp and Creed, joining us here on the program. Adam, great stuff as always, great musical selection, and we'll talk to you soon.
Can we get Rex Rowe to do some Creed karaoke?
Oh, be
yes.
Amazing.
We're down wide open. See, I'm just as good as Scott Stapp. That wasn't hard.
You need to work on that.
You do. I don't think there's any question about it.
It's not that far off.
Thank you, Adam.
Thanks, Adam.
All right, guys. Talk to you later.
Adam Vinget, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Rowe. We'll get your thoughts on the Preds, on Rex Rowe, Scott Stapp impersonation as well. 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 1025 The Game.
I do not manufacture hot takes or outrage. If I take a position as strongly as I did in that column, I have to actually believe what I'm saying. And that's what I believe. I believe that this team is in the worst place a franchise can be, which is stuck in a cycle of sustained mediocrity. And there does not appear to be a clear path out of it. And I think that's why what is contributing to the lack of confidence in the decision makers of the organization.
That was Adam Vinken from The Athletic on with us in the last segment. Appreciate Adam for joining us today here on the show. Joe, what did you make of those comments by Adam? Obviously, we talked about his column yesterday on the show in terms of the ownership group here with the Predators, the need, in Adam's opinion, for someone from ownership to speak on behalf of the direction of the franchise and on the direction of David Poile and John Hines as well. What did you think of what Adam had to say about that and about the reaction to his column as well?
Yeah, well, I'd say, obviously, we talk a lot. You and I talk a lot. Adam and I, and the three of us. And I mean, I'm pretty much in agreement with everything he wrote. I'm not surprised that most of the reaction has been supporting, even if a fan who isn't, you know, totally on board with, like, you know, David Poyle needs to be fired. I mean, who could argue, if you followed this franchise closely, that they've been transparent enough or willing enough to talk at the top level? I mean, they haven't been. Again, it's a unique situation, so we get that. It's just a different kind of deal. Most teams have an owner, and then that owner at times is compelled to speak on things because, you know, that ultimately it's that the owner is the one putting out the product, hoping the customers pay for the product. And it's different with an ownership group, but this came up last year too, early in the season when things were really bad. It's interesting. You look at the last two seasons of the Preds, it's like really rough early last year. Then it turns around and it kind of changes the discussion. And that takes that momentum into this year with major overachieving, but then it starts to go bad the other way, you know, at the end, and this comes up again. And I just think it's really important that, you know, that ownership, whatever happens, speaks to this and has some kind of a voice for fans to know who they're looking at here. And I understand Sean Henry. I don't think it's ownership flowchart, Sean, then David. I think it's ownership and then Sean and David in different segments right below that flowchart. Am I right? I believe that's what it is.
Mean, that's kind of the way that I view it, but honestly, I don't know. That's kind of the way that I've just always viewed it.
Let's have that too. Like, draw up a flowchart for us so that we can see it. Bring that to the press conference.
Well, John Hines has been reviewing what you've asked him about the last 3 weeks of the regular season. Add that to the list.
Exactly. We'll get the flow chart, big graphic, and then John will come with a detailed several pages worth of notes on looking back on all those losses. But in general, I want to go back and listen to the Willie Adam discussion, which I heard was spirited. And I agree. I'd say that's probably a good assessment. Willie's an optimist by nature. Is Adam a pessimist? He's a cynic. He's a cynic by nature. Yeah. But he's been covering this team as his beat for many years now. And it's hard to disagree. It's just hard to find the clear path from this to where they want to be without certainly some moves, like some unforeseen moves, and frankly, some good luck. I mean, there's got to be some good luck to be part of that too, with some of the guys in the pipeline becoming more than just pretty good players.
Well, the bottom line is what is the plan? Because I think Adam's point is there doesn't appear to be a plan to get out of it. And Willie's entire point was, well, this is the plan. It's rebuilding on the fly. It's, you know, the competitive transition where they started a couple of years ago. They had one of the oldest rosters in the league, which they did. And they now have a younger roster, which has been a transformation. I don't think there's any question about that. So the bottom line is, like, if you're a Predators fan, you have to determine, like, are you happy with that plan? Is that the plan that you think is going to work? Or do you think that another plan is required? So that's kind of the genesis of the discussion there between Adam and Willie yesterday.
Well, look, so if they don't sign Forsberg and they end up losing him for nothing, and then they come up well short of the playoffs next year, which is what I would expect, then what do we think about the plan then?
Yeah, it's a great question. And how does that
look?
Impact?
Too great.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't look great. And then that gets back into the old, well, are you rebuilding or are you tanking? And that's what the conversation was that we had earlier in the show. There is a difference. And there's been a lot of people on the text line today talking about, well, good teams, they draft and develop their players, and that's how they become Stanley Cup contenders, which I agree with. A lot of those draft picks come pretty high in the draft, like Nathan MacKinnon, like Connor McDavid, which, by the way, they're on the verge of elimination, and their best defenseman may not play in game six. So that'll be interesting up there in the next few weeks, but it's not always as easy as just drafting and hoping things work out for you.
Right. You gotta do everything well. You got to make good deals, you not get fleeced. You got to draft. But, you know, you can still, again, you get a Yossi in the second round. I mean, you can build a good team through the draft, and then, you know, you got to be smart with your money. And I think it's smart to pay Philip Forsberg right now. I have seen probably more sentiment than I would have expected from people saying, let him walk. That surprised me a bit.
Yeah, it surprised me as well. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Darren Donica Chase is coming up next. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game.